and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I watched the first episode of Hulu's Candy, and it freaked me out, and I want to talk about it. But first, I also watched the first episode of the Pentaveret, that Mike Myers show on Netflix. I also watched the first, four episodes of The Circle. By the time this thing comes out, I'm recording a couple of days before release day. And I also watched a movie, a 2019 movie with Matthew McConaughey, Colin Farrell, and some other people that was interesting called The Gentlemen. Colin Farrell and Hugh Grant. All right, so let me just try to keep my thing. Let me try to keep my thoughts in order. I learned that my mama be listening to the show. Shout out to my mama. Hey girl, love you girl. Anyway, so that's interesting. So now I gotta. My mama be talking about STIs. So I don't think I have to censor much because. When I say she be talking about STI, she works for a women's center. And so she like talks to young people, old people who apparently are catching STIs left and right because they didn't think they could. Anyhow, so mommy is no shrinking violet. So I think she can handle anything I bring up. So shout out to you, mommy. That's my girl. It was Mother's Day. It was Mother's Day. And as your youngest, just want to tell you, I love you. You already know that, but I just wanted to put it on wax or recording. Love you, girl. Anyway. All right. But let me go through it. Okay. So, also shout out that certain auntie called me the day before Mother's Day. You know who I'm talking about, girl. Anyway, that certain person called me. And it was interesting because it was all late and I don't know what the motives were. We'll talk later. Anyway, just wanted to put that out there before I forgot. Anyway, because I know you're listening. So anyway, love you. Anyway, moving on. So the reason why I want to talk about all these things before I get to Candy is because for some reason I decided to choose the wildest things to watch. So I watched the finale of Winning Time, The Rise of the LA Lakers. And again, if you're not on the Winning Time train, you missing out because there are so many. Listen, I've already talked about it last episode. I keep talking about it. I probably should have just reviewed every episode, but I get bored. So anyway, but that show did not disappoint me this season. I am expecting good things next season. That acting was what I needed. Anyway, moving on. So, the first one I want to talk about. What did I watch first? I didn't watch Candy first. So obviously I'm gonna put Candy to the rear because I'm talking about Candy episode one. I think what I ended up watching first. Oh, the Pentaveret. The first episode of the Pentaveret. Blah, blah, blah. Mike Myers vehicle, Netflix backed. Blah to the blue, blue, blue. It's stupid. And that's why I watched it. Because I knew it was going to be stupid. And it was stupid. And even in being stupid, it still found a way to include brown people. But like, well, I guess, anyway, it was stupid. Yeah, there's really not much to say about it. I watched the first episode. I think they put, Keegan-Michael Key in there. And he's supposed to be funny. He's not doing the trick for me. It's interesting enough. It's just, I don't know that I'm going to keep watching that thing. But it's interesting. Mike Myers himself is funny. I just don't think the show itself is interesting enough for me to watch that thing. The one actor playing multiple characters has been done. And even though Mike Myers himself has done it before, I just think it's tired. And some people find it witty. I am not, I think the wittiest thing about it is the fact that this, the whole premise of the show is that there's a secret organization that is controlling the world, which blah, 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 blah. And it's based on a throwaway joke that was from Wayne's World. That's like the most interesting thing about it, and conspiracy theorists being right in the show. Like, that's about the most interesting thing about it. It's pretty procedural for the most part, and I'm not into it, so I'm not going to watch the rest of it. But I think it was wild. It was stupid and wild and weird. And I think it was intentionally trying to be weird, but I think it was intentionally trying to be weird. It kind of missed the mark for me because it became boring. And like, oh, so now they're going to do something wacky and weird in the next episode and blah, 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 blah. Literally, Keegan-Michael Key's character joins this organization, this, what is it? What do they call the Illuminati type organization? Yep. That anyway, and they spend a lot of time making Canadian jokes or jokes about them saying sorry all the doggone time. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, that ship has sailed because last time I checked, y'all had quote unquote Indian boarding schools or what is it? Indian reform schools where y'all are still uncovering the remains of the children that y'all misused. So talking about y'all being extra nice and all of that stuff, it's kind of played out because you got babies' bodies that you still digging up across the country. So maybe cool it on that. Maybe find you a new joke because that I'm not laughing at anymore. And that whole trope about them being so nice and they don't do anything. Baby, that ship been sailed when all of those indigenous women kept coming up missing and nobody was doing anything about it. Ship been sailed, right? So like, move on, find more jokes. Anyway, not watching the Pentaveret, I think it's what it's called. But maybe you'll enjoy it. It's just not my cup of tea. Moving on. So the next thing that I watched was, I'm going to save the circle for last. So the next thing that I watched was, and I actually watched it twice, was The Gentlemen. It was a Guy Ritchie film, and I guess I'm a Guy Ritchie fan because I like the storytelling. Even though, like, the way that he uses black people is hilarious in that they're literally always the muscle and never a lead character of any stature whatsoever. There's never a black woman in there unless she's like a background person. But short of all of that foolishness, the plot is always interesting. And I think the most interesting thing about this whole thing, it's not Matthew McConaughey trying to play a bad guy. I really don't care about him. He always sounds the same to me. He always sounds the same. When he's a surfer, he sounds like he's from Texas. When he's a New York yuppie, he sounds like he's from Texas. When he's supposed to be a Midwesterner, he sounds like he's from Texas. All of those people that I just mentioned have different accents, yet he always sounds like he's from Houston or a Galveston. Actually, Galveston, not even Houston. Houston, I sound cooler. He sound like he from Galveston or something like that, or some country. Well, not that Galveston is a country. My bad. Excuse me. But he sound like he not hip. He sound like a country bumpkin is what I really mean to say. No diss against Galveston, Austin, any of those places, because Austin is probably the most hip plate part about Texas. Dallas is probably the coolest. And H-Town is like second to, well, actually, I don't know, depending on who you're talking to, H-Town is first, Dallas is second. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, none of that is what I'm talking about. Matthew McConaughey always sound like Matthew McConaughey in every film. And so this one is no exception. You can make him say British slang. What? Slang. You can make him say British or repeat British slang all you want. It's not going to make him. He's supposed to have been like a teenager who was from some country, little podunk place in the United States, and becomes a Rhodes Scholar, but doesn't finish, and instead becomes a dealer, like a weed dealer. And there's some weird, stupid, like philosophical conversation that happens mid movie where he's supposed to be like, yeah, but I'm ruthless and all of that, but I don't sell heroin. But you killed people to get to where you at. You literally are
bribing rich people who are no longer rich, but just keeping up appearances so that you can have weed growing places all over the country underground and whatnot, or on these people's lands. Like, give me a break. Like, anyway, moving, but his character was stupid. The best thing about Matthew McConaughey is that he looks good. That is literally it. I don't really too much care about too much of nothing he talking about. But anyway, moving on in the film, it was all entertaining, all kind of cool. The most stunning thing about this whole thing, which surprised me, and I should have known better because I have seen different looks from this person, but I guess I just thought he was a one-trick pony. Hugh Grant surprised the heck out of me. I saw something different that I don't think I had seen out of Hugh Grant. And this was like the first movie, like this is a Guy Ritchie shoot 'em up, bang, bang. Not a throwaway movie, but it's just like a high energy movie. It's not really meant to be, from my perspective, it's not one of those like Oscar bait or like BAFTA bait movies. I don't know if it even got a BAFTA or anybody from that film got a BAFTA, but like, it's not like top quality. But, well, actually two people. Hugh Grant, completely surprised me because I'm used to seeing him as either a villain or somebody that's supposed to be portraying somebody who's super affluent and has a hoity-toity accent. Like, you know what? I cannot name the type of accent, but they in the UK, I guess y'all call it posh or whatever. But in the United States, what I would compare it to is somebody from New York City that doesn't want to sound like they're from New York City, but a little bit. Like, there is an accent of the affluent folks in New York City who are from New York City, but it's different than the moneyed accent of New Yorkers is different than the non-moneyed accent. And it also depends on where you're from, but what is a posh accent in the United States? It's like something like New York and California, but like rich. Oh, that doesn't give you a descriptor. Anyway, to me, when I think of an equivalent of what Hugh Grant's accent tends to be, it tends to sound like somebody who sounds like they've been going to boarding schools all their life, never had to make their own bet. Like, they sound rich, right? So whatever that evokes in you when you think of accents, wherever you're from, how the rich people sound. And anyway, so I'm used to hearing Hugh Grant sound that way, but I should have known better because when I saw him it was a Netflix show and it was about the end of the year sort of thing. And it was one of those irreverent, dumb comedies that Netflix has become accustomed to putting out at the end of the year. And anyway, he was playing some old person that had that same accent, but like he was saying dumb stuff. And it was funny. And I was like, okay, there's a little bit of character to this person. There's a little bit of life. Because you already know the routine. If you look a certain way in your film industry, wherever you are, Nollywood, Bollywood, whatever they call it in the UK, Hollywood, all of that, whatever your film industry is in your country, you know that there's a couple of people that get there that can't act out of their way out of a bag, but because they look a certain way, because they fit the bill of whomever is in charge, what they want to see, they're booked and busy, like all the time. And so for the longest, I looked at Hugh Grant as kind of one of those, like, I never really looked at him as a for real actor. No, that's not true. I always looked at him as a serious actor, but I never looked at him as anything in depth. And now I'm seeing like this film really reminded me that dude has range, like for realsies. So he plays a rat, like a terrible person in this film. And his accent, now, mind you, I'm from the United States, so I really don't like, I dabbled in linguistics and things like that, but I gotta be honest with you, I know more about AAVE dialect and the accents of Black people across the United States, and accents and dialects from different communities across the United States than I really do, like too many other places. But because I like accents, because I like to listen to people and dabble in linguistics, I do recognize that there are different accents in the UK. And I think, and I could be real stupid, but I think the accent that Hugh Grant is evoking in this show is like Cockney or Geordie. And I think I'm actually leaning towards Cockney. And again, this is me not knowing too much of nothing about accents from the UK. I think it's like Cockney. And anyway, from what I've heard of other actors who, you know, every once in a while, like, you know how every time I talk about a Baltimore film and I gush over the non-actor actors who are from Baltimore, who authentically speak like they're from Baltimore, and all the nuances to their ethnicity. Like, if you are white and poor, but you grew up around Black folks, your accent is naturally going to be different than if you are white and poor, but you grew up around white folks in the metropolitan Baltimore area. If you are white and poor from Dundalk, you are gonna sound different than if you are white and poor from somebody who grew up in off North Avenue or West Baltimore. You're definitely going to sound, or like Pigtown, you're definitely going to sound different. The kid in Pigtown is going to sound different than the kid in Dundalk, just because of literally it's that. And Dundalk and Pier, so Dundalk is a different city, as a city outside, just outside. It you can say it's a suburb, but it's not a suburb. It's the outskirt. So Dundalk is on the outskirts of Baltimore. Pigtown is a neighborhood in Baltimore City, and it's Southwest Baltimore City. If you're from Pigtown, you're going to sound different than if you're white and poor from Pigtown, you're going to sound different than if you're white and poor from Dundalk. But if you're Black and you're from either one of those neighborhoods, you're not going to sound too much different, just because that's the nature of our, I actually don't know why that is. The only thing I can think of is that AAVE is so doggone strong that our accent, there are some breadcrumbs that kind of stay from one community to the next, from one city to the next. Like, they're just a few breadcrumbs. Like, on the East Coast, no matter if you're from New England all the way down to Florida, there's some breadcrumbs that stay in the vernacular that just kind of connect our accents. That's about the only thing I can describe. So while there are nuances and certainly different vocabulary that you employ in the dialect, it's still, for the most part, going to float. Mind you, like, somebody from Baltimore, a black person from Baltimore is going to sound similar but different than a Black person from D.C. It's just the way it is. And that's 45-minute difference. But there's still, like I said, there's some breadcrumbs. Whereas there are some breadcrumbs. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. Not my point. I'm talking about Hugh Grant. Blah. See, this is what happens. This is what happens. Anyway, but back to Hugh Grant. One of these days I am going to talk about linguistics in a way that makes sense, but not today. Hugh Grant, whatever the accent that he's evoking, sounds authentic to what I recognize to be non-actor actors, but who are put in specific, like, geographic-based films, meaning it's important to the story that you know that they're in this particular place in those type of films. And so you have to have actors, even if they're non-actor actors. Okay, so I got interrupted by an Amber Alert, which, can I just tell you, like, every time, my first instinct when I get an Amber Alert, and if you do not know what I'm talking about because you're not from the United States, an Amber Alert is our national alert system that everybody who opts in, do you have to opt? I don't know if you opt in to receive the alerts on your phone, or they're just naturally pushed to your phone. I don't even think you opt in for Amber Alerts. I think you can opt in for emergency alerts. And if you're opted in, you get these alerts no matter what you're doing. They just push through like a text, only more than a text, because they literally stop everything. It's almost as if you get a call, but this call literally stops anything else you're doing so that you will pay attention to it if you have your hand on you. More than that, even if your phone is on mute, it's gonna vibrate, or if you have the the light flashy thing that like I have if you're sight impaired or hearing, no, if you're hearing impaired, you have the light flashy thing on there. Which I'm not hearing impaired. I just would prefer not to hear my phone. I don't like to hear the ringtone of my phone. I don't. It's obnoxious. And so, but I always have my phone on me. So I'd rather the light, and I know I'm not the only one that do that. But anyway, it's a good trick. If you don't like your phone to ring, put it on the hearing impaired thing where it flashes instead of like your camera flashes instead of it ringing or vibrating. Cause I don't like none of that. Anyway, so yeah, it like stops operations, like all operations for the most part, so that you can focus on that Amber Alert. And my natural reaction is to get mad because it just happened. And so what happened? It stopped the recording because the Amber Alert came by. And that was my natural first reaction. Dag, why you do this? Why are you interrupting me? But then my second reaction was guilt, because if I was missing my baby or my child or somebody that you would need to send an Amber Alert or any kind of alert for, I would want people to pay attention to those. And so I feel stupid right now and a little bit selfish. So I'm just getting it out so that I can move forward, because clearly somebody's baby has been taken by somebody. And you know what I always find, or what I've seen, especially, well, when I've paid attention here in Maryland, it tends to be some disgruntled partner who's using the child as a pawn. And I can't always say that it's the abuser. I can't always say that, but it's always a child. At the end of the day, regardless of who the taker is, it's usually somebody using the child as a pawn. It's not even about the child. It's about hurting the other person. And that's trifling. That is so doggone trifling. Anyway, but let me get back to, let me just say this. I pray that they find the child that we got the Amber Alert for here in the Baltimore area, and actually Central Maryland. I believe everybody in Central Maryland just got this Amber Alert. And it was actually, this is the second Amber Alert that was put out today. And I think it's in connection, well, actually within the last hour and a half. And I think it's in connection. I think they're tied to each other. Like the first one was just sharing out a license plate and a make a model of a car for you to look out for, or a vehicle for you to look out for. And the second one was literally putting out the child's name and where they're coming from and where they might be. And so all of Central Maryland got this Amber Alert. So I pray that they find that baby safe and well and get them from round whoever tried to use them as a pawn or take them in any way and try to harm them to get back at someone else, or just whatever. Just get that baby back to somebody who actually cares about them. Anyway, so let me move on. So Hugh Grant, I think I'm just blown away, because again, this is a shoot 'em up bang bang, talking about the gentleman. It's shoot 'em up bang bang. I'm just astonished at, I'm surprised to see Hugh Grant acting in this light. But again, I don't know his, I was about to say discography. I don't know his work, body of work. I don't know all the things he'd be doing. But like, I know from this that he has more range than I gave him credit for. And I was excited. Part of the, also, he was a creep. Like, not only was this guy like, he came across as very unscrupulous, he also came across like a sexual predator, which there were some times where he was sexually harassing a tough guy in this film who's played by somebody who a lot of people like gush over. He's a handsome guy, but like I know that he was in the Sons of Anarchy thingy. I never watched it, but like I know a lot of girls would like pass out if they saw him. Or a lot of people, because a lot of people would pass out if they saw him in real life, because he looked like, you know, he built. But like there were times where he was clearly sexually harassing this man in his own home. And I think Guy Ritchie put that out there. Look at this man in. Can I just pause for a second? So I live in downtown Baltimore, and there is a particular street that has the light rail or a train that takes you to and fro, as trains do. Anyway, so the way that our tracks work, it's almost like a trolley, if you have a light rail, then you understand the train tracks are raised, but not enough that you couldn't drive over them. It's not like the CSX trains or passenger trains. It's like they're elevated, but not too much that you couldn't drive over them anyhow, or you would have to slow down and drive over. Well, I guess you probably should slow down, but anyway, we never do. Anyhow, so I'm looking at where we live. I have a great view of the street where the tracks are going in either direction. And there is a single lane because you can only go one direction on this part of the street that I live on. It's one way where we live. Anyway, and so in the middle of these tracks is this road, and I literally just witnessed somebody in a wheelchair, a high dollar wheelchair, rolling down the road like a car. And I said to myself just in that moment, I said only in Baltimore. But then, you know, I'm sure it's not only in Baltimore. It's just that's some type of stuff that you would see in Baltimore. They had to get where they were going, and they didn't want to get on the sidewalk. Now, mind you, there's plenty of sidewalk for them to be on. But they said, no, I'm going to be on the street because I got to get where I need to go. And so to them, I say, I pray that you get where you need to go safely, because you were going. They were also going the opposite direction. So if this street goes north, these people were going south. This person was going south on a one way in between the train tracks. Moving on. Only in Baltimore. Well, again, not only in Baltimore, but it figures that you would see that, or that I would see that here in this fair city. Moving on. Okay, back to Hugh Grant. I'm going to get off him in a minute. But anyway, he surprised me with his characterization. It was creepy and beyond. Because I don't know what Guy Ritchie was trying to prove in this moment, that men can be sexually harassed by other men too. Like, it was weird. Like, dude was creep. Like, he kept making sexual advances at him and sexual innuendos. And I was like, okay, weird. But anyway, but in looking at his overall character, I was just like, this guy is an absolute dirtbag. But wow, look at Hugh Grant acting his butt off as a dirtbag. Anyway, thought it was great. The other actor that I'm beginning to have more respect for, and again, I don't know his body of work. I imagine if I was from the UK, from Ireland, you know, spent time there, that I would probably see his work more on regular TV. And that's Colin Farrell. I've begun to look at him with more respect. And I think the thing that helped me make the switch was the Batman, actually, because I believed who he was playing in the Penguin. His transformation into the Penguin was kind of cool. Like, but you know how somebody could physically transform into a person but not embody him? Like, I know that a lot of people don't like Christian Bale, and for good reason. I don't know too much about him, but the few things that I've heard about him, he's not a nice person, and so I'm sure he's done other things too. But when he transforms, he do transform into that thing that he's portraying. And so you tend to take people serious like that who go through the extremes for their body and then actually can act. Now, Jared Leto ain't one of them for me. He really not. Like, I was impressed by his Joker only because the Joker is flashy to me, and he is a dirtbag, and Jared Leto is a cult leader and is a dirtbag. So, like, that fit. But oh, that was trifling of me, but I said it and I don't care. Anyhow, he's probably a dirtbag. He's probably a dirtbag anyway, but like, I like my Joker to be a dirtbag, but like stylish and cool. I gotta have my Joker stylish and cool. Batman is not cool for me. He's just a rich vigilante. I gotta have my Joker stylish and cool, and that did it for me. Now the rest of the film, you could throw it in the trash. His acting wasn't even that great, but the look, dug it. The pink, the electric pink, whatever the heck type car that is. If my husband was listening to me now, he would just shake his head because I should know what type of car that was, because he's a car enthusiast. It's just, I don't know it. Anyway, But whatever that type of car that was cold-blooded. Okay, cold-blooded. Even the what did baby say? The glow? The underglow? Did it have an underglow? I don't know. I'm just throwing out words now, but like it was fancy. Anyway, but yeah, like the style was great. And even Robin, what's her name? Margot Robbie's Harley fit. Like that fit for me. But no, that movie was trash. And anyway, like, don't really love all of Jared Leto's work. Did not like him as Morbius because that whole thing was stupid. Anyway, but like good character acting to me means something. If they do it right, you're like you're in the story. They suck you in the story. And when I saw Colin Farrell, I keep wanting to say Firth, but that's a different person. Colin Farrell as the Penguin. I was like, oh, okay. You're not gonna top Danny DeVito's Penguin. You're just not gonna do that. Like, I'm partial to, you already know, Michael Keaton has a place in my heart, right? So you're not gonna top, well, actually, wait a minute. Was the Penguin in that one? No, it was just the Joker, right? The Penguin was in the next one. I can't call, you know, shoot, I can't call it. But anyway, you're not finna top Danny DeVito's Penguin. You can just do yourself a different version. And I know that there were other Penguins. Don't know who played them, don't care. But Colin's Penguin, I can get behind that because he absolutely looked like a creep. He also looked very dangerous and I believed it. Danny DeVito's Penguin looked like a creep and he also looked like he was dangerous, even though he was cartoonish. Because you had what's that guy that did Edward Scissorhands? Anyway, the guy, the director who also did Nightmare Before Christmas, Tim Burton. You had racist old Tim Burton's hands all over it. But nevertheless, Danny DeVito is Danny DeVito. And that acting. So yeah, you can't top Danny DeVito's. You can only do something different. And Colin Farrell did something different. He made me believe he was a dirtbag. He also made me believe he was dangerous. I believe that he was dangerous. And I wanted to see more because I'm like, ooh, you know how I have said this before, but I have a penchant for villains. I do. Because villains tend to be the more stylish ones. They are. Like, name a villain that ain't stylish. Even the Joker was stylish. Come on. Not the Joker, but the Riddler. The Riddler is also super stylish. Like, you name me a villain that isn't. Name me a Bond villain. Name me a Batman villain. Name me a villain, period, that ain't stylish. Even if it's like they don't even have to be super colorful, but they're always stylish, y'all. Come on. Like, how can you not like a villain? Like, just let yourself be free to enjoy whoever you want. I choose to enjoy villains because they're bad. Like, their style is bad, good. Anyway, I'm too old to be explaining that. This, you know what I'm talking about when I'm saying it's bad. Anyway, so yeah, like, I was like, oh, okay. If I'm not mistaken, Colin made him with a gold tooth. Like, he looked like, okay, play with him if you want to. You gonna wish you found somebody else to play with. And I'm like, oh, okay, Colin. Okay, do you? Because at first I was like, that look like, is that Colin? And then I saw a transformation. And I was like, I will be doggone, that's Colin Farrell. Anyway, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna keep an eye out on you because I'm seeing a little something different. So I'm watching him in this film and I'm like, oh, like, I know he's Irish. And I know, and he's also supposed to be Cockney, or maybe he's Jordan. See, there I go again. Geordie and Cockney, I think the reason why those two accents stick out to me is because they're very specific. And you can't just perpetrate those accents. Just like for me, you can't perpetrate AAVE. And I think that's why certain accents stick out to me like a sore thumb, because they're so intricate that you can fake it if you want to. You're just not going to be good at it if it's not in you. And the Geordie accent to me, the Geordie accent and the Cockney accent, you can't fake those. You can fake them. And if it's not in you, you're going to sound stupid. Just like if you try to fake, if you try to fake AAVE, you're going to get it wrong. You're going to get the syntax wrong. You're going to get the phrasing wrong. You're going to get the inflections wrong. Even certain country accents. Well, no, if you take AAV out of it and you just think country accents, you can still mess up a country accent because, again, there's a part of it that, well, actually any accent. Boston accent is by far one of the strongest accents that people love to mimic and often get wrong. The only thing that people tend to get is the pocket car and hybrid yard. Yard. Or I see how it ain't even in me. It's not in me. So you see how wooden that sounded? You see how stilted that sounded? It sounded fake, right? Because it's not in me. And that's exactly how people sound when they try to fake a Cockney accent. It's not in you. But listening to Hugh and listening to Colin, I'm like, excuse me. Okay. Excuse me. All right. And then also, you know what I liked about? So Colin looked like, how can I explain this? So it's clear white people and Guy Ritchie in as a white male trying to be cool, their relationship to coolness and people of color is wild to me because, like, sometimes it's like they're trying to be so politically correct that they don't want to be offensive. And clearly there are some statements in the show, in the movie, that make you think he was trying to be politically correct or at least trying to be topical. And it almost came across like you were doing too much. But if you go to any predominantly black or predominantly brown neighborhood, if there are white people that are in those predominantly black and brown neighborhoods, people in the area tend to have the same swagger. You might not be from that same culture, but you spend enough time in it and you get that swagger. And there's a piece of that swagger that is, it's in you. It's just like the accent, it's in you, right? And so Colin Farrell in The Gentlemen is playing like a boxing coach. He's a boxing coach. They call him Coach. Anyway, he's like a boxing coach. And so he, to me, embodies one of them hood boxing coaches that just happens to be a white guy. So he has a sense of dress. Now, mind you, that might not be your cup of tea because they're literally in like nice looking tracksuits, but it's tracksuits nonetheless. And his whole wardrobe is some sort of variation of a sweater and some tracksuit. Yep, that's like the variation of his style. Like he and tennis shoes, stays having tennis shoes. And then is that hat called a pork pie hat? The type of hat it's not a bowler. My daddy has some of them hats. He don't love those hats, but he do have a few. And it's like an old man, here's the deal. I'm not trying to disrespect nobody. I liken the hat that Colin Farrell wore all the time and as coach, felt like an old man hat to me. Mind you, he's not supposed to be like dumb old, but you can tell he's supposed to be older. He's supposed to read older. Like everybody's dad. You know what I mean? Like everybody's dad or old or like uncle. And so anyway, but he was like everybody's cool, stylish uncle that had like a little swagger to him. And anyway, it felt natural to me. It didn't feel like he was, it felt natural to me. And I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And so throughout the whole thing, what characters was I really watching? I was watching Colin Farrell and Hugh Grant, because those were the most intriguing to me. Matthew McConaughey, again, cannot stress to you enough, sounds like Matthew McConaughey in everything he does. You can tell him to use some vernacular, have him use vernacular that is specific to the area that he's in, and it'll just sound like Matthew McConaughey saying some regional dialect, saying some words that should be said in the regional dialect, but he don't have a range. He do not have a range. Anyway, so, because again, you want me to believe that this person You want me to believe that his character moved to the UK when he went to college and has stayed. So let's call it, this dude is well into his late 40s, approaching in his 50s, right? Let's just call it that, right? So let's just assume that he was like 18. So from 18 to darn near 50, you mean to tell me none of the Cockney accent, which Guy Ritchie always wants you to believe that the ne'er-do-wells, or maybe that's just where he loves to spend his time. You know what I mean? Maybe that's what he loves to portray, Cockney and Gypsy, their version of Gypsy accents and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, maybe that's what he likes to spend his time doing, but it always seems like it's always around crime, and I don't know what to make of that. But whatever. But no, like, you mean to tell me that this person who spent his time coming up the hard way in the underworld, the Cockney area, or wherever that accent comes from, I recognize that that's a place in London. You can't call yourself Cockney unless you lived in a certain mile radius of some bells that in a like a triangle or a certain area of town or whatever. And I'm probably butchering the explanation of that, but Google it. Anyway, but you mean to tell me you spent your time in that area that has one of these, a very strong accent, and you mean to tell me, though you be from the United States, you spent at least, call it 20 years, you ain't got no parts of an accent? Even I, being in Baltimore for a decade and some change, say Baltimore with a D, that T is gone. Now, mind you, when I first came here, I think I said Baltimore. Or Baltimore, that's how I used to say it, Baltimore, because my accent. But I say Baltimore now because I've heard it so much. I just say Baltimore, or no, Bolton, what am I saying? Baltimore instead of Baltimore. And so, and that's just something that happened. And you know how I know that I said that? Because my mama, I think my daddy, pointed out one time when I was around them and I was definitely back home, back in Missouri, my mama said, it sound like you from there now. Now, mind you, I know that I don't sound like I'm from here, but definitely aspects of the vernacular I picked up. And that's just less than 20 years. You mean to tell me that this person that Matthew McConaughey is supposed to be playing, again, though he be country from the United States, you mean to tell me he ain't picked up too much of nothing in, not even the vernacular, because you can say the words, but it sounds wooden. Like, come on, like, ew. Anyway, I was paying attention to Hugh and Colin. Anyway, the movie itself has twists and turns. Again, it's a shoot 'em up, bang, bang, so it's going to get you there. But, like, it was weird, and I was like, okay, well, let's sign me up. All right, so, anyway, so it's from 2019, so it's whatever. If you're into Guy Ritchie, shoot 'em up, bang bangs, you'll enjoy it. But again, there's just not enough women of color in there for me. It's not even just black women. It's like the one woman that's in there for realsies is a white woman. And I'm like, she has her place. She's Matthew McConaughey's wife. But you mean to tell me there can only be one woman in there? And that woman is, there literally can be only one woman in this whole thing. And everybody else is way in the back bag. And the rest of the actors that get any speaking time or any real presence on the screen are men. Dumb, 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 dumb. Anyway, doesn't make any sense to me, but it was entertaining. Anyway, let's move to The Circle. I think the only thing I want to say about The Circle is this season sounds interesting. This season is playing out interesting. There are more. I like it now when there are more catfishes and there are more twists and turns, because the dumbest thing in the whole wide world is the same thing that these people keep saying. I just want to be off my authentic self, and I want to just prove to the world, girl, you ain't proving nothing. You going in there trying to hustle and lie. Oh, I just want to be open and honest. Well, there comes a point where everybody who lied and said, excuse me, everybody who came in there saying they was wanting to be open and honest end up lying to manipulate or game the system so that they can win, curry favor. Even that one, remember that, was it the first season? Was it the first season of The Circle where that white guy won? And dude was just manipulating. He was finessing people. Like, not finessing to the point where there was some finesse involved. You lying a little bit. You lying a little bit. Anyway, in that game, if you're trying to get anywhere, you lying at some point and you lying at some degree, but you're lying. And so anyway, so yeah, the show is interesting, but it feels more interesting this time because there are more catfishes in the room. The Spice Girls are in this thing, and the longer they last, the bigger the pot grows. Like the more eliminations that they can live through, the bigger the pot grows. Now, the time that this episode comes out, the other episodes will have dropped, and so you will know whether or not the Spice Girls made it through their first elimination. I'm praying that they will, because I think it'll be more fun that way. And plus, Sporty, Scary Spice is cool. I really like her. She's funny. Anyway, although that leopard is tired, retire it, baby. Let it go. But again, I recognize that that's what she was wearing in the 90s, and that was part of her aesthetic. But baby, I'm asking, let her go. Just don't do it. But watch the rest of the show for as long as she going there. She a leopard. Leopard print, a tired leopard print at that, like not even variations of colors, just a tired leopard print. But anyway, and then baby, give it up. Like that's infantilization and a little bit weird all in the same time. Give it up. But you know, that's how we knew them. Anyway, interesting show. Looking forward to seeing how this thing plays out. All right. So I have talked way, 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 way long about other things. Let us get to candy. And I'm going to say this. When I tell you the ride that the first episode took us on was a sight to behold. I didn't even have the heart to watch the first episode a second time because it was so much up in there, baby. So much up in there. And I will tell you now, what's her name? Jessica something, the woman married to Justin Timberlake. Can't call it. In the next segment, I'll get my thing together and I'll say it right. But anyway, when I tell you that this thing gonna be interesting, and my nerves are gonna be bad. I can already tell my nerves are gonna be bad. Anyway, now there's not a stitch of a person of color in there except for background. So I'm gonna just get that out the way now. I don't typically. Well, I think this Jessica, whose last name I cannot remember right now, I think she's part Native American, but you know how that goes in the United States. Everybody part Native American, but I don't think, anyway, I don't know that a tribe claims her. How about that? But I don't know. Maybe they do. Anyway, ain't a stitch of a person of color that has spent a significant time on the screen. That said, the show is nerve-wracking. So I will talk about the first episode and all the particulars in this next segment, and make some predictions about how the show will go. And maybe in the next couple of over the next couple of weeks, I will revisit it. I'm sure I will revisit it, but yeah, man. Oh yeah, I just got a COVID update. Wear your mask indoors because stuff's getting real. And I'm like, yep, stuff truly is getting real. Anyway, but I will come back in the next segment and it'll be all about Candy, Hulu's Candy episode 1.
Okay, y'all. So I sound different because I had an early appointment. If you have been listening to this show for any length of time, I'm driving. If you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you know I'm on a fertility journey and I had an early appointment, and the only time I could record is following the appointment before I started my busy, busy day. And I wanted to get this out, so here I am. So I sound a little tinny, and it's going to be okay because I have my headphones on. And they're not quality headphones, so it is what it is. But hopefully the smooth tunes you hear underneath the recording will make it sound okay. But you're going to hear some, like, road noise in a minute because I'm about to get on the expressway. But anyway, I know you'll hang out. And maybe there's a little bit of ASMR quality in here. I don't know. I don't know, maybe not the volume of my voice, but anyhow. So Candy, the Hulu series Candy, was released because I can't tell you all the particulars because I'm driving. But what I remember looking up before, I forgot that I had some appointments, was that this thing was released last week. So the first week of May, and it stars Jessica Biel. Jessica Biel, I don't know, is it Biel? No, Justin's wife, that going, and I'm still not any better. I think it's Biel. Justin Timberlake's wife, you know who she is. Liev Schreiber's brother, or half-brother, Pablo Schreiber. And who else major does it? Oh, and there's another woman who I'm familiar with, but I cannot call her name at the moment. But anyway. Oh, and another guy in there who was a part of, that was a part of, Veep. He was stupid guy, part of Veep. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Look up the cast. Anyway, so this show, Candy, the series Candy, is based on true events. So it's not fictitious, although there are aspects of the show that are embellished. The story itself is true. And so what's the story? In a nutshell, the story is somebody's cheating and somebody's dead. That's kind of the crux of it. And that's in the story, but the how we get there, because we learn pretty early that something afoot happens. Something happens to one of the main characters. And we also know that Candy, who's played by Jessica Biel, is at the center of the story somehow. And the question is, how does she get there? And so what I will tell you, just my initial thoughts, because at this point, by the time you're hearing this recording, there are at least two episodes that have been out, that are out by now. I think it's one episode a week. So it'll be like any other regular drama. One episode a week. Actually, it may be three, it may be two. No. I think it's just one episode. Anyway, so you know a little bit more about the story. But how can I put it? This scared me a little bit. And I think I said that in the intro because I recorded that a couple of days ago. But this show scared me a little bit because of, and it didn't scare me in the fact that there's like murderous, somebody hacking somebody else to death or shooting somebody up or doing some other physical harm to folks. It's not that. And in fact, when I tell you that one of the characters dies, I'm not giving away the story. I'm not giving away the story because there's so much, that's a piece of the story. There's so much more to the story to come. But one of the things you need to know is in that first episode, we don't even see too much of the person who died. We see blood. We see somebody petrified, but that's it. Like, outside of that, it's a lot of nuance. It's a lot of implication, implying that something has happened, that someone else was involved in something else. And here's the other thing. There's a lot of nervous tension. And I mean nervous tension. That's why what I'm really saying, this why I'm saying that this episode scared me, was because there was a lot of nervous tension in the show. And I was like in it. I allowed myself to let go and get into the story. Even though the story itself, cheating and somebody dead, that's like a true, that is the basis for so many true crime stories. like in time in memoriam. So the story itself is not necessarily unique. It's the how we get to the story that's there. And quite frankly, the acting as well as the soundtrack has a lot to do, and the direction, I will say, has a lot to do with that feeling of anxiety, manufactured anxiety that this show gave you. And so let me explain. So the first episode, we meet, and I don't know any names, but we meet couple A, which is Pablo Schreiber and his wife, and Pablo Schreiber's character and his wife. I don't remember the characters' names. Google it, you'll find it. But I really just remember Candy because this thing centers around her. So we're introduced to Pablo Schreiber's character and his wife. It's the 80s. This story is set in the 80s. And it's clear that they're trying to rekindle a spark in their marriage. They've been together for some time, and they're trying to rekindle a spark. And you also get the sense early that his wife is a neurotic, jealous, insecure. Like, you get kind of all of that from her. You also get that something may be wrong, or maybe that's just me because it's Mental Health Awareness Month in the United States, and also because I work for a mental health organization. Maybe I just can't help but analyze folks, even though I'm not a clinician. But looking at her, you could tell that something was amiss. And I actually think, now that I'm kind of talking it out and thinking it through, you're meant to think that something is amiss with her. You're meant to think something is amiss with him. You also, looking at Pablo Schreiber's character, you get the sense that he's walking on eggshells. We've caught them in the bedroom getting ready for bed or something like that, or maybe, yeah, getting ready for bed or something. And, they're in the bedroom is the point. And it's just the two of them. And she's in her nightie, and it's just like a regular, like, gown, nightgown. It's not anything sexy or anything like that. But they're talking about some upcoming trips. An upcoming trip in honor of their anniversary. And when they got married, they went to some French town. And so they're going to go back. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, you get the sense that Pablo's character is just trying to reassure his wife. And his wife is just on the edge. You get the sense that she thinks he's cheating, or he's being unfaithful somehow, and he's trying to reassure her best as possible, and it feels like something is slipping in her. And you also get the sense that this marriage is slipping a little bit too, you're meant to believe that he's trying really hard, and there's a reason why I say that. You can probably guess why I say that later, but at least in the beginning, you get the sense that he's trying hard. Whether or not that's genuine or not remains to be seen. I imagine we'll learn more about that as the series goes on, but you get the sense that he's trying to make things work with her, whereas she's just holding on to reality, to the relationship, to her own sanity. She seems like a woman on the edge. Anyhow, and in this moment, they're in a bit of a lover's quarrel because he has to leave for work. He has to, he travels a lot for work. He's in like IT or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but he's like, it's the 80s, so technology is booming at this point. And he's in the thick of it. So he's with a technology firm, and he's got to go away. And you start, or at least I did, I started to put the pieces together. Either he has cheated before, done some things that made her feel like he was cheating, or she's just completely paranoid. And either way, they're in trouble. In their marriage, they're in trouble. And they need to sort the thing out. anyhow, so the scene ends with the two of them kind of on a good note, with the two of them kind of thinking about the future and thinking about this trip that they're going to have, that is reminiscent of their honeymoon. But one of the things that his wife repeats is that I don't like it when you go away. And so that scene cuts, and then we get to meet Candy and her husband. One of the things that you learn very quickly about Candy and this community that they're in is that it's a small town community, and a lot of their daily life, included in their daily life, is activities at church. And many of their friend groups have been acquired or created at their local church, this area church. So you get the sense that they're not in a big city or a big town, but that they're in like a little suburban little area, something like that. You know what I mean? And again, it's very much the 80s, so lots of perms for white people, like curly hair, taking straight hair and making it curly perms. As opposed to taking curly hair and making it straight for black people, or people that have African heritage, which is black people, the diaspora, maybe. Anyway, so lots of perms, lots of... Pause really quickly for a second. So the 80s, I was remarking to one of my colleagues who's younger by like a decade than me. And we were talking about the 80s, and one of the things she remembered was like, yeah, it was lots of bright colors. And I'm like, I'm looking back at pictures of me I don't think I was in those pictures, but of my family members from the 80s, and that stuff wasn't bright. Like, yes, there were, you know, candy colors, like now and later colors, but by and large, lots of browns. There were lots of browns and greens, like dull kind of weird greens and things like that. Like, it wasn't bright. And so this film, the filmmakers do a really good job, or the series, the cinematographers do a really good job of kind of not over coloring the time frame. Do a really great job of making this series look like the time frame. So again, lots of browns, lots of beiges, earth tones, but like dull earth tones, reds but not vibrant reds, oranges but not vibrant oranges, just kind of like just there orange. Anyway, so as we're engaging with Candy and her family, you get the sense that this is a totally different picture. Her and her husband are okay. The kids are all right. There's some life there. She's energetic. She's bubbly. She's the life of the party. You get the sense very early that she's something of a leader in the church. And so, again, if the church is the center or a center of the activities in this community, which it appears to be, then she's right in the thick of it. And like, she's the it girl. She comes across as the it girl. And anyway, she interacts with Pablo Schreiber's wife, and it's stilted. Like, you get the sense that Jessica's character is trying real hard to just keep being, you know, again, kind of like Pablo's character, just really trying hard with this lady. So you get the sense that Jessica's character is really trying hard to be her friend, but something is off. The wife is not receiving her. And you're like, what is this? What is this? What's happening here? Why isn't she being received well? So I guess the reason I think I jumped ahead. So blah, 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 we meet Candy and her family. And then, you know, it seems to be an okay family. They seem to be pleasantly in love. She's telling a story. She's reciting a story that she's ultimately going to recite to the kids at Bible study. and she's reciting it to her husband. And yeah, totally normal, nothing out of ordinary here. Kids, totally normal, nothing out of the ordinary. You see Pablo and she interact, but like nothing too fancy, too extravagant or weird or anything like that. You know, you get the sense that it's two people who are married to other people, but who happen to know each other because their kids and their whole families attend, their families attend the same church and do a lot of the same things. So anyway, so you see all of this, and one of the things you need to note is that she's got a kid over her house. It's actually Pablo and his wife's kid, their daughter. And she's spending the night over Jessica and her husband's house because she's friends with Jessica and her husband's daughter. And so anyway, she's spending the night, and Jessica decides that she's going to spend another night over her house. And she calls Pablo Schreiber's character's wife to get permission. Number one, not even permission, let's be clear. She kind of just said, your daughter is staying over here because she's just been having so much fun. She's got swim practice. I want to come over and pick up her swim clothes or her swimsuit because she doesn't have it over here. And meanwhile, she's having this whole conversation, very one-sided. Pablo Shriver's wife really doesn't get a word in edgewise. But again, there's this tenseness. There's this uncomfortableness with Pablo's wife. And you still can't quite put your finger on it. Is it just that this lady is super neurotic and she just has no chill? Or is there something more? Again, we all know the premise. Somebody's cheating and somebody dies. And it revolves around Candy. And so you start side-eyeing Candy like, what's up? But like, there's nothing that points to you, that points to Candy being like anything but bubbly, the center of attention. And so you're like, okay, at this point, you're wondering, well, now how do we get to that place where something happens and things are not okay? So anyway, there's supposed to be a play happening. It's like, I think it's summer. Yeah, it's summer. And there's supposed to be a play happening. And so Jessica's character drops off Pablo and his wife's daughter, plus Jessica and her husband's daughter, at the church so that they can get ready for the play, and she's meant to come back. So she drops the kids off, then she goes over to Pablo at his wife's house for the express purpose of picking up the swim clothes, the daughter's swim clothes. And that's the thing. Let me pause. So one of the things that we need to know is that Pablo's wife is really freaking stressed out by the time Jessica Biel's character calls her. And I feel sorry for her in this moment, because it feels like nobody's paying attention to her needs, and she just needs someone to listen to her. She just needs someone to give her some attention. And here comes Jessica Biel's character forcing her agenda onto her. And it's just one more person that's not listening. I'm on these rocky Baltimore City streets, so you can probably hear, you know, downtown, the streets can't always be nice, can they? Anyway, back to what I was saying. So here comes Jessica Biel's character forcing her own agenda onto Pablo Schreiber's character's wife. And again, it just kind of adds to this uncomfortability in the scene. This woman is uncomfortable and feels like she's uncomfortable in her own daggone skin. And so anyway, and nobody's listening. And so Jessica Biel's character is like, yeah, I'm going to come over at noon. And is that a good time for Pablo Schreiber's character's wife? No. But like, whatever, come on over. So Jessica Biel's character comes over at noon, like she said she was going to, following dropping off the kids at the church for the play. She goes in there. We see again Pablo Schreiber's wife looking very uncomfortable. And then we see Jessica Biel's character going in. And then jump cut, we see Jessica Biel's character coming out of the house, hopping into her car, and there's a little bit of blood on her. There's a little bit of blood like on her foot or something like that. And as she's leaving the house, because again, she's over Pablo Schreiber's house and his wife, seeing his wife picking up the swim clothes. Like she's wet, her hair's wet, and you get the sense that some of her body is wet too. I'm going in my garage. This is what that is. Anyway, you get the sense that some of her, like, she's wet, and you're like, what the heck happened? Why do you have droplets of blood on you? Why are you all wet? Like, you went to her house super pristine, your hair was all dried and done, and you looked cool, you looked fine, not cool, because she looked very nerdy, or not very nerdy, but just like not cool anyway, but like she was fine. Now all of a sudden you're rattled, you're not confident at all. I don't know where your glasses are, because she had this, the thing is, she had glasses, she don't have no glasses on. She's all wet and she's got blood on her. So you're like, what the heck, man, what the heck is happening? And so blah to the blue, she gets home, she's changing. One note, she had flip-flops on. She changes out of her flip-flops and she puts her regular shoes on. And then she goes back to the church, and you get the sense that she's putting on airs now. Like she's pretending that everything is Jake. And, you know, she starts doing this weird thing where when she goes to the church, one of her friends, it says, you missed the play and your baby's going to be frustrated. And then she immediately rattles off this story. You know, I went and I saw so-and-so, Pablo Shriver's wife, to go get the swim clothes. And then I just got to talking. And then I went to Walmart to get some other supplies. And my timepiece, my watch stopped, and I just lost track of time. And like the story that she recounts is clear. And your first instinct is, well, girl, why are you recounting the story? Why are you telling all of this detail? Like, this situation didn't require you to say all of that. But she does say all of that. And not only does she repeat it to her friend at church, she repeats it to her kids. She repeats it to her husband later in that day. And it's literally told the exact same way. So now you begin to recognize, okay, something in the milk ain't clean. Something is amiss here. What has happened to Pablo Schreiber's wife? And what did you have to do with that? Here's the other thing you need to know. Pablo Schreiber and his wife had a preteen and then a toddler. And one of the reasons why Pablo Schreiber's wife was feeling so out of sorts is because you get the sense that she's a new mom for the second time. And not only is she a little bit neurotic and stressed out normally, but she's clearly not getting a lot of sleep. Pablo himself is not really helping out, but this is the 80s, and you get the sense that men as a rule didn't really help out because that was woman's work, right? So while he's able to just chill and find some peace, she's the one getting up, changing the diapers, trying to coddle the baby and anything like that. So the other thing that adds to her stress is the fact that she's a new mom. Or she's got a toddler that she's taking care of. And toddlers don't give a doggone about your feelings, about your sleep schedule, about what you got going on, because they're toddlers. Anyway, or newborns. Maybe that's still a new one. Anyway, let me kind of hasten the story on. So anyway, that's more backstory about Pablo Schreiber's wife. Because now I got to get these characters right. Candy. Because I'm stopped now. And of course, it's not going to load because I want it to load right now. Anyway, okay. So let me hasten on. So anyway, so she's going around telling this whole story. She's changed her shoes. Somebody at the church following the play notices that she no longer has flip-flops on, that she has regular covered closed-toed tennis shoes on. And again, by this point, she has repeated herself. She repeated that story of going to Walmart, losing track of time because her watch stopped like 3 or 4 times at this point. And actually, so, but there begins to be a little nick in the armor because somebody noticed that her shoes are different. And anybody who's a true crime buff starts to see this pattern, right? She's clearly saying all of this and repeating her timeline so that she can embed that memory into everyone else around her, so that should something come up and her alibi is called into question, that people corroborate where she said she was. Because that's how you implant memories, right? So that's what she was doing. Very cunning. But there's a little nick in the armor because somebody remembered, oh girl, you didn't have your flip-flops on that you normally have. Remember, I told you, when she left Pablo Schreiber's wife, she had those flip-flops on, but then she washed. Oh, this is the other thing. She washed her clothes. We see her wash her clothes as the episode goes on. We see that she washed her clothes before she goes back to the church and then begins to share that story. And so, I guess the last thing that I want to say is about Candy before I go back to Pablo is, episode 3 is out. It is episode 3. By the time you get here, episode 3 is out. Hold on. Let me get to this cast. It says it's a murder mystery. Okay. It stars cast. Okay. It is Jessica Biel. Jessica Biel as Candy Montgomery. Melanie Lynskey is Betty. Okay. So Betty is Pablo Shriver's wife. Pablo Schreiber is Alan. So I'm going to stop calling him Pablo and start calling him Adam. Alan. Timothy Simmons is Pat. Pat is the gangly guy from Veep. And Pat is Candy's husband. So Pat and Candy are cool. Betty and Alan are the ones whose marriage appears to be on the rocks. And that Alan is just trying to keep things together. But Betty's is seeming like a woman on the edge. Okay. So, Candy has been telling Pat, so Candy has been telling everybody this story, her alibi essentially, and all we as viewers are suspect, like, girl, what you doing? Cause you did something to Betty. You know something. Maybe you didn't do something to Betty, but something happened, and now you're trying to get your story straight. You're washing your clothes to get all the blood out of it because you know people need to see you in the same clothes that you were in before. But you messed up because you don't have the same shoes on. You have closed-toed shoes. Anyway, and so people are just noticing a little bit of things, like things that are off with her. The final thing I think that is so remarkable is that she spends all the day telling everybody that will listen her a story so that she can embed that information. And then it's the evening, and Pat, of the day of the incident, Pat says something, and I think what triggered the conversation, I don't remember what triggered the conversation, but Pat says something, and it sets Candy off to tell her alibi again, give her alibi again. And Pat is like, you said that before. And so I'm like, girl, you are messing up. If you're trying to set an alibi, you're not doing it right, because now the only way that you can embed memories, if you do it slyly, you're not even doing it slyly anymore. Like you're overcompensating and you go and get yourself hemmed up. But again, that's anybody who watches too much true crime will say that. And then, you know, you're in for a wild ride. Meanwhile, let me switch back to Alan. Alan again, I told you at the beginning of the show, the first scene is him going back and forth with Betty, Betty not wanting him to leave, and him seeming like he's doing everything to reassure her that he's going to be back, everything is going to be fine, they're going to rekindle their relationship. He goes away, and Betty calls his boss to check and see if he's really there. And you get the sense like, girl, he's actually at work. Like, for realsies, he's really at work. Like, he said he was going to be. Like, what happened here? But again, you take a step back and then you're a real person and you recognize she's not doing this for no reason. Alan wants us to feel like she's doing this for no reason. But you and I both know she's checking up on him for a reason. We just don't know what that reason is. So he's calling her back, like she's calling him back and forth, and he's trying to reassure her. And he's away on business because, again, he's in IT or some junk like that. And anyway, so there's a point where she stops answering her phone and he keeps calling. And it's like 2 days, like a day and a half, a day goes by and he's not hearing from her. And he increasingly gets frustrated and scared. He's not eating well. He's seeming like, at first, the first couple of times she doesn't answer, he just thinks something like she's mad at him. But at third, fourth, fifth, sixth, he's panicking. He panics so much that he calls the neighbor. And by the time we get here, by the time we get here, it's been like a day and a half and he's still out on business somewhere. Like, you get the sense that he's had to fly. Wherever he went, he had to fly to get there. So he's not in the state. And he can't get a hold of his wife. And while his preteen daughter is with the Montgomerys, the toddler is still with Betty. But he's really just checking up on Betty because she's not answering the phone. So he's so frustrated and he's just so tense that he gets his neighbor to call. Or he calls his neighbor. Excuse me. He calls his neighbor. See, this is what happens when you go to bed late and get up early. He calls his neighbor to go check up on the house. And at first, the neighbor goes over there and he's like, oh, everything is cool. And then Alan's like, go check again. My wife is not answering and I'm concerned. And after giving him a little bit of attitude, the neighbor goes back over and then he gets reinforcements because he's like, something might be wrong. Because he's like, the neighbor goes over and he's like, yeah, I didn't see at first, but the lights are on. The car is there, but nobody's responding to the door. So I think something is wrong. And Pablo's like, get in that house however you can. Okay, break the door down if you have to, but get in there and tell me what's happening with my family. And so the neighbor, I guess, is a realtor and has a realtor key. And he gets the key and he gets some reinforcements to help him, like in case something is up. And he tries to use the key on the front door while two other guys that are with him try to go through the back door, try to break in to get into the house. When his neighbor tries to use the realtor key, he realizes that the front door is open. And it's been open all day. And so they go in the house and now they have guns drawn because something is amiss. They hear the toddler crying or the baby crying, but they don't see Betty. They don't hear Betty. They don't do anything. So they go room to room. They go room to room in the Montgomery's house. No. What house is this? What's Betty and Gore? The Gore house. And so they go room to room, and then they finally get to a room that's just off the side, just to the left of the door. Excuse me, you get the sense of something like a den. And it's in this den where they find the remains of Betty in a pool of blood with a pair of glasses next to her. And the neighbor calls, one of the other neighbors calls, Alan calls the house, and one of the guys that's in there trying to find his wife or see what's happening picks up the phone. And then Alan is like, well, what's going on? Is everything, you know, what's going on? Is everything Gucci? And the neighbor says, no, nope, everything's not okay. Betty's gone. And the final scene that we see is some glasses, a pair of glasses that are linked next to Betty. And remember, I told you Candy left their house without her glasses on. So you get the sense that those glasses that are laying next to Betty are laying next to Betty are Candy's. Here's the other thing that happens. And Candy trying to play it off this next day or so, the veneer cracks a little bit and she throws up. She's so frustrated, but she's still trying to keep a solid front. When Alan goes on his calling spree, he calls her a couple of times. And you think that's odd, because when he's calling her, he's calling to see if she's seen Betty. She gives him that same alibi again. But he doesn't tell her to go see Betty, to go check on Betty, even though she knows she was over Betty's house. He knows that she was over Betty's house, their house. He never tells her to go and check up on Betty. And you get the sense of, why does he not ask her to do that? So you put a pin in that because you're not 100% sure. But you do think he's genuinely concerned about Betty and wants to know if she's okay. Talking about Alan. And he calls her like twice. He calls Candy twice. And each time Candy's like uber nervous and trying to play it off. And so I think it's for these reasons. We know Candy is lying through her teeth about something. We know she had blood on her. We know she was there, perhaps, when Betty died. We also know that Alan is far away from home and doesn't know that his wife is dead until the very end. And he's been calling her all day. And he's gotten increasingly frustrated and sad and scared. And then you get the sense that their child don't know. Their preteen doesn't know. And what in the heck is going on with the baby? Who's feeding the baby? Who's taking care of the baby? Now, what we know is that the neighbors find the baby and swaddle him and then take him over to their house to be cared for. So nothing's wrong with the baby apart from just not having eaten and probably has a rash from not being changed. But nothing else is wrong with the baby. And so you start looking back on the scene earlier from Candy leaving the house all wet. And you're thinking, why would you leave the baby? Why didn't you call the police? What's happening here? But we don't get those answers because the episode is over with the spotlight on Candy's glasses laying right next to Betty in a pool of blood. And again, I say this is based on a true story. Now, mind you, a number of the details are embellished, but this is based on a true story. The cinematography, the acting, the lies, the not knowing was the thing that scared me. I did begin to watch the second episode and parts of the third, but I got to go watch them again because I was distracted. This TV series is like something like a slow burn. And it also simultaneously makes me want to go look up the real case to see what happened. So anyway, if you're not watching Candy, you should be. You should be. Because it's interesting. It's good. Creepy, but good. Anyway, that's enough of that. It's on Hulu. I don't know if it's playing on ABC or anything like that. I just watched it on Hulu. I think I don't know if it's a Hulu original or not. Can't call it, but it's on Hulu. Go find it. it's interesting to say the very least. I don't think you'll be disappointed. It is a little bit of a slow burn, and you do need to be careful to watch for details. So that's what I would tell you. But anyway, I am going to call it a day. I got some stuff I got to do. I'm literally running a webinar series, and then I got an interview with a local TV station later today that I have to prepare for. Because mental health month. Because mental health. And so, yeah. So I said it before. I'll continue to say it. Take care of yourself first. There's only one you. You got to take care of you. If things aren't okay now, give yourself some time. Give yourself some grace. They'll be okay later. And that thing that you might have wanted to do may not happen for you, but open yourself up to the possibility that something else will happen. Something else good will happen to you, because good things, you deserve to have good things happen to you. Take care of yourself, protect your own mental health, support the people around you, and get some good sleep and drink a lot of water, because both of those things are important. Anyway, thank you in advance for giving me any favorable reviews that you appreciate on the, or that you wish to give me on the Purple app, or anywhere where you listen to this thing. At the end of the day, that is what helps to spread the reach of this hobby that I like to do. All right. Share this episode with anybody that you might think will dig it, or any of my other episodes that you think would be intriguing to somebody that you know. Yeah. Have a wonderful day, y'all. Go finish that project. Until next time.